Positively Mental on the County 10 podcast is always made possible by the Wyoming Department of Transportation. WyDOT reminds you to never drink and drive. Not a smart choice. DUIs cost you financially. They cost you a job. You may spend a few nights in jail. And what's even worse is they could cost you your life or someone else their life. Not a smart choice. Get a sober driver every time. Big shout out to WyDOT for all of their hard work, especially throughout the summer. County 10 podcast made possible by Elevate Rehab, Hand and Orthopedic Physical Therapy in Lander, the only two certified hand therapists in Lander. They do FCE testing, return to work training, and so much more. Great staff at 4th and Main next to the Verizon store there, kind of around the corner from Main Street in Lander. They see patients in Dubois twice a week. That's Elevate Rehab. And finally, the show made possible by Rendezvous Dental. Great new facility. We had the opportunity to go to their grand opening a few days ago. They're accepting new patients now. Congrats to Dr. Sackett and Dr. Crane at Rendezvous Dental.
Exploring mental health and the human mind one episode at a time. This is the Positively Mental Podcast. From the Porter's 10Cast studio, here's professional counselor Lance Godey.
Welcome to Positively Mental, everyone. I'm Lance Godey, and as usual, I'm joined by co-host Tara Carr, and we are here once again in the Porter's 10Cast studio. Welcome back to the studio, Tara.
Thanks, Lance. It's good to be here.
Oh, it is now late August, and all minds turn toward a return to school. Just this week, our local school districts have all gone back to some form of school. The community college where I work is in their first week of classes, and across the country, we are trying to return to schools if we can. Some states and their schools have really been struggling with their ability to open and to decide in what ways do they open, trying to balance the safety and health with the need to keep our students moving forward. So we thought it was a good time to have a back-to-school session where we discuss the impacts on both the students and the staff, let alone the parents and community members, on going back to school. But as usual, we also want to find those positive gems of action that are in our community and challenge those of you out there in our listening community to find your own positivity. So the start of the new school year is exciting for most kids, but it also prompts a spike in anxiety. Even kids who are usually pretty easygoing can get butterflies. Kids prone to anxiety get clingier and more nervous than usual. Parents certainly feel the pain as well. They're leaving a crying child at preschool. It's not a fun activity. And having to talk a panicked first grader onto the bus or out of the car at school can really be a real test of your diplomatic skills. So kids who normally have a little trouble separating from mom and dad will see their anxiety peak during times of stress or transition, notes Rachel Bussman. She's a clinical psychologist at the Child Mind Institute. And the start of school may be especially challenging for kids who are entering a transition year, that she adds. So going into kindergarten, going into middle school, starting a new school, it can be stressful if there's a change in your child's social support system. So maybe a good friend has moved or a different teacher this year. And add to that, the current COVID issues really increase the stress levels on both kids and their parents. Even if you're returning to higher education, it's hard to avoid the anxiety that comes with it. For most students of all ages, the new school year worries will fade. They will fade, and the anxious behaviors will be transient. So the goal for parents is to be supportive without exacerbating your child's worries. For parents, the start of the year can be anxiety-inducing as well. The doctor noted, pressure is on you to reinstate routines after summer break and arrange for new activities, new schedules, not to speak of as well about the facing the resumption of homework. So Dr. Bussman recommends taking our own temperature, so to speak, to make sure we're not passing on stress to our kids and to enable you to manage your own stress. She says it's important not to take on more commitments than the family can handle comfortably. She notes that there is a contagion effect that we have to be careful of. So that's all leading us up to today, where we're going to dive into what our local schools here in Fremont County School District number 25, what they're doing, what they're seeing, and what they're prepared for when it comes to opening our schools back up. So our guest today is Nicole Schoening. She's one of the school social workers in the district. Welcome, Nicole.
Thanks, Lance. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So we're excited to have you here. Nicole, tell us a little bit about you, how long you've been at the district, and what you do there.
Sure. I started in the district in 2001, so this is my 20th year in education. I was at Shoshone for a year, and I currently am a social worker at Rendezvous Elementary, which is our fourth and fifth grade building here in town. There are two social workers at Rendezvous, myself and Mrs. Redden, our other school social worker. Our district is really blessed to have social workers in every one of our elementary schools. At the middle school, we have five counselors and social workers, two social workers, master's level, and then three master's level counselors. And then at the high school, they have four, two social workers, two counselors. And also at Frontier Academy, we also have a full-time counselor. So we're really blessed in our district to have a wonderful working group of professionals that are dedicated to our students' success, in particular with their mental health. And we know that when our students come to school and they're happy and they're healthy and they feel loved and cared about, that they academically are able to achieve at higher levels. And so that's really our focus and our intention. At Rendezvous, we spend a lot of time just identifying basic needs. Sometimes our students come to school with having not had breakfast. Sometimes they come to school without having a real consistent routine at home. Sometimes they haven't slept at night. And so if you're familiar with Maslow, a lot of times we're looking at that very basic human need of food, safety, and security, which we all know in order to have healthy relationships, we can't achieve those relationships without those basic needs being met. And so a lot of our day starts off just by making sure our kids have those basic needs met. And then from there, Perry and I do a lot of crisis counseling. If students are experiencing a crisis in the home, or sometimes we have students get off the bus and just fall apart. And so we may start our day with those students just trying to, I always say, we peel the layers back on the onion and we ask those important questions of, have you had breakfast? Did you sleep okay last night?
Yeah.
And we identify any of those things that we can easily fix first. And then we try to peel back the layers and really get to the root of the problem. We do a lot of group work in our schools. This year, I'll talk more about it later, but we're going to be doing groups every day in classrooms to address social emotional learning for our students. We're very excited about that. And then we also do a lot of just community building, reaching out and working with other agencies that can also support our students outside of the classroom when they're not there. And as you both know, this year that was particularly important our students, that we had those good relationships. And so we're constantly reassessing and re-identifying other community agencies that can support our students as well.
Boy, it's extremely comprehensive, and that you've got staff in every single school is incredible.
Absolutely. I tell people all of the time, Wyoming is blessed that we have the focus that we do, and we are allowed to have that many social workers and counselors in buildings. I follow a lot of social media sites involving elementary school social workers and elementary school counselors. And the American Association of School Counselors recommends a ratio of one counselor to every 250 students. We exceed that in our district, and we're so proud of that figure that
Should
we truly
be.
Yeah, feel like we can comprehensively offer programs to meet all of our students wherever they're at when they walk through our doors.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, Nicole, you touched on some of the things, but what special programs has the district developed specifically this year to meet some of those emotional needs? And you may not even know what those needs may be yet, right? So kind of looking into the future to recognize these things and develop a plan.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think that right away when we went into this unknown in March, social workers got together, and I'll be honest, we all had to spend time processing our own emotions.
Oh, yeah.
about all of this. And so I kept saying to the other social workers, you know, if we're feeling this way, can we imagine how our students feel? So we instantly started just having those conversations about what we needed to do to support our kids. And I mentioned we would contact other outside agencies that we knew also had connected to with this families. And we really tried hard to, as much as we could, utilize any of those other resources. We also knew that coming back to school, there was probably going to be kids coming with more anxiety than ever.
Absolutely.
And anxiety is something that we're seeing more and more on the rise with our students, and we address it more than ever. It is probably the one mental health issue that we deal with more than anything is anxiety. And it's it. We know it's going to continue to be on the rise, but also because of COVID and because of the restrictions that we've all been in and the uncertainty for our future, we expect that we'll still see an increase in anxiety this year.
Is that where the groups have come from? The concept of the groups is really an offshoot of that need?
Yeah, we were gifted with an opportunity. And I say gifted because it is hard. We are an academic institution. Mm-hmm. And our focus can't always be on mental health.
Right.
And we strive to meet the students where they're at, address needs as they come up, but also get them back into the classroom so that, I always say, so the magic can happen, right, so they can learn.
Right.
And as a result of COVID and just a lot of schedule changes, but in particular, we're moving to very small groups at Rendezvous. We had an increased need for specials, which are art, music, and PE, computers and library. And my principal came to me in July and said, you're going to be in the specials rotation. So I will get to spend 50 minutes every single day with kids and teaching social emotional lessons, teaching emotion regulation. We're going to be doing some things around growth mindset later on in the year as we approach state testing in the spring. Mm-hmm. But our first and foremost concern as we venture back with kids next week is going to be just checking in and really identifying where they're at. Because as Tara mentioned, we just don't know.
Right.
And for some students, this experience may have been very positive. For other students, it may have been exactly the opposite. Yep. So first, kind of assessing where our students are at and allowing them an opportunity to process their feelings around our quarantine and around COVID and now coming back to school, how are you feeling? So
sure,
that's probably where we'll start.
Yep.
Well, and I was just thinking about this. I mean, you can't really tell how well the students are prepared, but do you have an idea? Have you talked to parents? I mean, how do you feel that these children are preparing or prepared to enter an actual academic institution again after being off since March?
That's an excellent question. We had a move-up night for our fifth graders last evening, and I was just delighted to see our kids.
Uh-huh.
Their faces, they're excited to be in school. They had their masks on. They're ready to be back in that setting. And I kept checking in during summer school. We did have summer school a few weeks ago. That went very, very well. Our students quickly adapted to our new routines. And, you know, kids love routines and structure. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that, too, in a little bit. But by and large, our students were just so happy to be back in our buildings. And I think in our building, we've done an exceptional job of building relationships. And they know that we are people that care about them. And we have a philosophy at Rendezvous that we treat our students first and foremost as human beings, and we take that time to build relationships with them and treat them as people first. Learning will come, but we have to have those relationships in place, and I think our students know that about us, and that's what we strive for across the district is that relationship piece. It's so important.
And that feeling of safety.
Oh, absolutely. That's the second. You know, we've got the first tier of Maslow, basic human needs. And then the second tier of Maslow is safety and security. And so they have to know that they're coming to a building that's safe and predictable and that routines are established, which is so, I think sometimes it's why people get a little frustrated because schools are very structured places. but it is purely for the intention of allowing students to feel safe. When we know what's coming, we feel safer in our lives. When things are coming at us from a dozen different directions, it makes us feel very uncomfortable. It increases our anxiety, and we then sometimes we fall apart and melt. So when we can create a real structured day for our kids, they thrive under those conditions. So,
for sure. So as a staff member of the district, or as you think of other staff members, what kind of anxiety do you have, and how do you find ways to deal with those? So many supporting staff within the district, and you're working with these students. What are you guys doing for yourselves?
Well, we panic. We're human. We panic for a moment.
Sure.
I always tell my principal, I'll panic and then I'll be fine. I'll work through it. But I do need to sometimes have a panic. I think yesterday, the past couple of days, we've spent a tremendous amount of time just going over new protocols. And right away, I could tell our staff was very overwhelmed. I was feeling a little overwhelmed myself because we want our kids safe. We want them healthy.
Of course.
And we are striving to keep our schools open. And it is a very, very delicate balance right now. And if we don't adhere to our new protocols and a student gets sick, it doesn't take much for this cycle to occur and we're in quarantining classrooms or we're quarantining a building. And yesterday, my sense was with our staff that they're all feeling that pressure to want to be in the building, but also so worried that something is going to happen and one of us gets sick, one of the kids gets sick. And I think right now that's the biggest fear that we all have. I think all of us are a little concerned about the mask use. And I think parents, I want to really encourage parents that masks are only going to be used in areas where we cannot socially distance. So the hallways, the bathrooms, recess if they're playing within close proximity, so 6 feet or less of one another. But when they are in their classroom environment, they will not have a mask on. That being said, we worry about that increasing students' anxiety as well. Mm-hmm. And there are staff members who are uncomfortable wearing masks. We have staff members who have underlying health issues. And sometimes breathing is harder with a mask on. So the thing that Perry and I, that's Mrs. Redner, our other social worker, we spend a lot of time processing with our staff and making ourselves available to our staff. I had a great conversation with the staff member just today. And we try to keep that door open. To always maintain that unconditional regard for our staff, but also professional confidentiality so that they have a place where they can come and process their own emotions before they're with kids, so that when they're with kids, they can be fully present and engaged. As far as self-care goes, I love a good walk and a good book. I'm an Audible girl. I listen to a lot of books and podcasts, such as yours. Mm-hmm. And so that is really where I get kind of refueled. My family is a great place for me to just rest and renew. But we are so fortunate to live in a state that allows us to get out and explore and really relax. And we encourage our kids to do that as much as possible. I'm sure you're both aware that we are in a world now where technology is the one thing that our students really crave. Every year we do a screener in our school, and one of the questions we ask our students is, how important is screen time to you? And we're never shocked, but we're saddened by the amount of students that spend time on technology. We have offered and hosted coffee connections with our parents to just talk about the use of technology in the home and that dopamine dump that occurs when students are on technology. So we encourage and we try to really get the kids outside as much as we can, which we will be doing this year a lot because they're going to be inside so much. So,
Well, it's interesting as you talk about your own self-care. It really goes to the foundation of kind of like on an airplane, is that you take care of yourself before you take care of others. So you really have to remind yourself that, you know, someone who's not taking care of themselves can't help others. And your job is to help them. Oh, so you've got to take care of yourself. And it sounds like there's a lot of systems in place to really self-care with each other, so that then you can concentrate on working with the students.
Yes. And don't you love that mental image when they say, you know, when the oxygen mask comes down, put it on yourself first, mm-hmm. and your child second. I just used that over the weekend with a friend. I reminded this particular person that we can't take care of others until we're taking care of ourselves. And at times that feels selfish.
Right.
At times you feel very selfish when you're preserving sacred time in your day to address your own self-care. But it really is true.
Yeah.
And it leads to burnout. And unfortunately, we see that. We see that with our teaching staff. We see that with our paraeducators who spend phenomenal amounts of time with our students.
And yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, I'd imagine, and we touched on this just a little bit, but friends and family members of the children are also heavily affected. And are there any services available? You had talked about the coffee talk, and you extended that for, you know, devices and technology. Is there anything else that's available for family and friends of these students that you may offer through the district?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say to my families, when you're good, your kids are good. And taking care of our families is as important to me as taking care of my students. When families are healthy and things are going well at home, our kids thrive. When there's chaos or instability, or they're worried about where they're going to sleep at night, that's what is on their mind when they walk through those doors. And I love to engage with our families in any form. So we have had hosted coffee connections. It's something we do at Rendezvous once a month. We pick lots of topics, from reading to math literacy. And so then we also decided to incorporate just some social emotional things, because as you both know, as parents, kids don't come with a book of instructions.
They do not.
Right.
And unless somebody is out there putting this information out there and welcoming you in, it's hard to say, I don't know how to respond to this. I don't know what to do. And so we really want to destigmatize and normalize. Parenting, A, is really tough, but B, we're here to help you. And so we started this Coffee Connections group where we just invite parents to the building once a month. And our last topic last year was on anxiety. Because again, we're just seeing more and more parents are involving their children in a lot of activities. And students, kids, take on the responsibility of trying to be perfect in everything they're doing. And I think often as parents, we're doing it because we think it's great for them to be involved. It's great for them to be busy. But the downside of that is they're trying so hard to make us happy and please us. Yes. That it's often at the expense of their mental health. And so we spent a whole coffee connections just on the topic of anxiety. We love to have our parents in the building. This year it may look a little different. I presume and hope that we'll be offering those connections via Zoom so that we can still get parents into the building. But we try to utilize any other outside agency. Wind River Cares, for example. What a resource for our Native American families. They are great. And they are Johnny on the spot. When we call them, they're responsive. They're so helpful to the families. And we do try to, DFS, we utilize DFS quite a bit too, just for some prevention, Fremont Counseling Service, Wyoming Counseling, Aspen Psychological. So we definitely branch out and reach out to those other agencies as needed.
Well, you know, something that's interesting is I have a semi-adult child, and he picks up on my anxiety still. We talk about it, and we say, "How's your mental health every day?" And I just wanted to share that with you, because that's something that's been a good resource for us in our home. But that anxiety doesn't go away in our adult children.
No, no. And Tara, I'm laughing because, I mean, my poor son has a social work mom, and I came home one evening. And I must have had something on my mind. I was a little bit grouchy. And he picked up on my energy. And he turned to me, and I'll never forget it. He turned to me and he said, "What's really going on with you right now? Because you just got home and you have no reason to be mad at me." And it caught me. And it stopped me in my tracks. And that's the first thing I say to parents is, I don't have all the answers either. Right. I am just as human as you are. But I want to get through this with you, and I want to support you through this because I love your child, and I see hope, and I see opportunity, and I see just a beautiful human being in front of me, and anything I can do to support my parents is absolutely as important to me as it is to support my students.
Yeah. And a gift for you as well, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, definitely.
And I think about, you're talking about that socio-emotional learning concept of trying to really intervene at your school levels. And I work at the college, as you know, and it's, we see it there. You mentioned the increasing levels of anxiety. There was a time, you know, I've been at the college for 25 years, and there was a period of time in which depression was a much more obvious, prominent thing. And I would agree with you 100%, anxiety and that stress levels that they're bringing in and continuing. I think anything that school districts out there that are trying, like School District 25, is going to have a long-term effect. We're going to see it at community college, at the university, wherever they're having to move on to after high school. If they're getting that in school, plus you're partnering with their family and their friends to really make it a multi-dimensional thing, that when they keep moving on, they're better for that. So that's a huge thing that's going to have a big impact. And I absolutely commend the district and any other districts out there, is if you're not doing this, you are really selling the student short.
Well, and I think, as we've talked about it in our district, so many adults walk around and have anxious feelings and they don't even know. They're not even aware of what anxiety is. And it's so important that we destigmatize mental health, that we start having these conversations, and we just make it mental wellness. We just make it part of our day every day. We teach a couple of different curriculums, but one in particular is called Zones of Regulation. And it's a curriculum that has been in place in years. It's been written years ago, and it's often utilized by occupational therapists, but it works, and it was designed to work with students who had autism. Mm. But it identifies times in our lives when the things that make us feel really, really good, that would be a green zone. Times in our lives that we, maybe we're starting to get a little feeling in our belly that we're not quite sure of this situation, that would be a yellow zone. Then we teach those moments in our lives when we are angry. And we have them identify very specific examples of times when they have felt red. We have felt yellow, a little uncertain. We felt really good. We felt green. And then blue is when we're feeling sad or lonely. And so when we can take very specific examples out of a child's life with them, and we can help them to identify, oh yeah, this was a time when I was really feeling red, or I was really feeling yellow. Then the next step is, okay, so when we're feeling red, what are strategies we can do to help bring us back down to yellow or maybe even green? And so it's a very basic idea, but our students respond very positively because we're taking real life examples for them and we're normalizing it. And we're saying, that's okay. It's okay to feel that feeling. I was talking to a family last week, and they're dealing with some grief and loss in their lives. And this individual kept saying over and over, "I'm just so angry." And I said, "That's okay. It's okay to feel angry right now. Anger protects us. When we don't want and we're not ready to deal with the sadness or the grief, anger serves a purpose in our lives, but it's our job to kind of untangle that feeling and to figure out what's going on and what do I need to do for myself to get me back to green again.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned you know, kind of some of the things you're doing and some of the outcomes and some of the examples that you could share. Is there any particular success stories or like really things that have touched you that really speak to why you do what you do and why you've done what you've done for so many years?
This was such a hard question for me to answer because honestly, I love the hugs. I love the students who are happy to be in our building every day. And so on a very basic level, I love what I do because I love that human interaction that I get with our kids every single day. And I love that they love us. I love that they want to be in school with us. There's no better feeling than seeing a student walk down the hall and say, Mrs. Schoening, and give me a huge hug. And we talked about the implications of COVID and are we going to be able to hug our students? And so I've been kind of teasing around with my husband about different signs that I can show our students, like just a little heart, something I can show my students. I see you. That is the most important thing. I think they want to be seen. And so on a very basic level, I just love the interaction. When I get a little deeper into that question and I really kind of reflect on what it is I love about my job, I love seeing hope and feeling hopeful and getting excited for our students and their future and the possibilities that I see in them. And I want to hold that possibility in my hand and support them until they can hold that vision for themselves. Sure. And Lance, that's a lot of what you do at the college too, right? Is just helping find that thing that makes those individuals feel so good about who they are as individuals and then holding that vision for them until they're able to hold it for themselves. And so on a deeper level, that I have had students in my office, and this was one of my very favorite students last year. He's moving on to the middle school, and that's hard when they leave us, but we miss them. We never forget them. I don't think they realize that.
They never forget you either. No. I can tell you that. Yeah.
But he was sitting in my office, and he was a puddle. He was just a mess of emotions. And he said, I just don't know what this feeling is, but there's a feeling inside of me that makes me feel hopeful. And it was so cool that he could articulate that and that he could share that in that space with me. And I was so proud of my student, a little fifth grade boy that just life was kind of falling apart. But he recognized that deep within him was something that just made him keep going. And I said to him, that's hope. And that's all we want. All it takes is one caring adult to make a difference in a person's life. Isn't that something? One person. And we often underestimate that. Right. You know, we really don't think about that. And so if I can be that one person, that's why I love my job.
Yep. Yeah. Sure.
Thank you for sharing that. That just touches my heart so much. And Nicole, I feel for you because I'm a hugger. And even in our own home, I have to wash up before I hug my son. And he says, Mom, I got to hug you for 5 seconds because that makes it the most effective. And so I just kind of wanted to share that story with you because it's been difficult for me not to hug the people that I love as well. Oh. And I can't even imagine these little beautiful people that you work with. So is there anything else that you'd like to add or share with us about services from Fremont District 25 or anything else that you'd like to add?
You know, I was reflecting on this question. I really want parents to feel comfortable contacting their school if they have questions, they have concerns about their child. We oftentimes can meet with students and just help give parents direction. And I want parents to utilize that service. I want parents to know we're here, that our number one priority is their students' success. We don't come with an agenda. We are there because we love what we do. We believe that education leads to success later in life, so we really want to keep our students in school. And our job is to purely try to give them the skills so that they can be successful in that setting and beyond. I always say to my kids, this isn't just a skill for school. Mrs. Schoening wants you to be successful in life. And so I'm talking to you about this today so that you can be successful wherever you go, whether it's Rendezvous or the middle school or the high school. I want you to be a success. And in order to do that, you have to learn these skills. But I really want parents to know we're on their side. And that we're all in this for their child, that we're a team, and it takes a team. It really, truly does.
And that's definitely any school district. I think not just ours. I mean, we're speaking, Nicole's here to speak to us about District 25, but it's something that all school districts have in mind. Yes. Whether they only have one social worker for a huge number of students or they have 20 of them, is that the teachers, the administrators, the custodians, the bus drivers, they're all there to try to help students move down the road and feel better.
Yes.
All the way around.
You know, you mentioned bus drivers. We practice what we call restorative practice. And restorative practice is the idea of when there's been harm done to a relationship, what steps do we need to take to repair harm? And we often use restorative practice in place of a punitive consequence. Mm-hmm. What we know is that the more we suspend and we punish behavior, that doesn't lead to behavior change. And so we teach restorative practice at our building, so fourth and fifth grade. And last year, I was able to bring a bus driver in, and I led a restorative conversation between a student and a bus driver. And I love our bus drivers. They have, I think, one of the hardest jobs in our school district. But the bus driver was so happy to be included in that conversation because she's so busy driving the bus and she has a tremendous responsibility to get our students home safely. But she was having a conflict with this particular student, and we sat down and she was able to express from her perspective how she was feeling, and the student was able to listen and then respond. And it changed their relationship. The bus driver thanked us. She followed up with us several weeks later to say things were still going very, very well. And so I think, you know, we forget sometimes that we have all of these peripheral staff members who have contact with kids. Yeah. And they love your kids too. They love they love the kids as much as the parents do, the teachers do. And so we try to remember that and be mindful of that. But you mentioned bus drivers, and I had to share that story because it was great success.
Absolutely, and I think that's so important, is there's multiple staff members throughout a school district that are all pushing for the same thing.
Yes, definitely.
Betterment of the student. So, Nicole, thank you for joining us today and talking about Fremont County District number 25, the mental health services that are provided there, and just everything that you've brought. It's been very informational and very appreciative that you've been able to share with us.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to have been here.
So as we come to the close of this podcast, we want to leave you with a challenge on actions you can take. This is what we typically do and based on what we've talked about. So this week, here is our challenge. When it comes to either you, your kids, or someone you know going back to school, recognize how difficult that might be. Be kind to yourself. Talk to and listen to your kids. Ask them if they are afraid or anxious, and seek help if you or they need it. As I have stated in numerous podcasts before, it always goes back to ensuring that you take action when there is a problem. I also wanted to take this moment to remind you about a new process that is related to how we finish every podcast, reminding folks about the suicide prevention hotline. So on July 16th, the Federal Communications Commission adopted rules to establish 988 as the new nationwide three-digit phone number for Americans in crisis to connect with suicide prevention and mental health crisis counselors. The rules require that all phone service providers direct all 988 calls to the existing National Suicide Prevention Lifeline by 2 years from now, July 16th in 2022. It's an amazing opportunity for a simple three-digit number in times of crisis that puts the caller in touch with a professional. And we really look forward to when this is active across the country. Also remember that as of a few weeks ago, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number that we give out at every podcast will now be answered by Central Wyoming Counseling Center staff in Casper Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 because of special funding from our legislature. After-hours calls are answered by the national system, but it's still great that we have an expanding Wyoming presence of mental health support. So that's it for today. We want to thank you for listening. And if you know someone struggling with their mental health, talk to them. Listen with an open mind and offer your support or call a professional. Remember, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline number is available 24 hours a day and is 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. And remember, let's all be positively mental out there.